Hello, and welcome to Zing Talk, where Benzinga brings you the biggest names and brightest minds from Silicon Valley to New York City. Today, our guest is Adam Feuerstein, senior columnist and biotech analyst for TheStreet.com. How are you doing today, Adam?
Good, Andy. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Could you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do at TheStreet.com?
Well, I am the biotech stock columnist for TheStreet.com. I have been I've been working for TheStreet covering biotech for just a little bit under 10 years.
What got you started in the biotech sector?
I've been a business journalist for more than 20 years, and covering biotech was kind of a natural outgrowth of some stuff that I had covered previously in the technology sector. I covered, internet technology, business software, and when I, when I came to work at TheStreet.com, they asked me if I could cover biotech, and I'd always had an interest in the field, so took it on. It's amazing to think that it's been 10 years since I've been covering the sector, but there's always things that are going on, so it's a great beat to cover.
Now, you say that your earlier technology writings kind of prepared you for going into mm-hmm. biotech. Like, can you explain exactly what you mean by that?
Well, in terms of, the way I tell people, as a business journalist, you're expected to cover a lot of different beats. I mean, I've covered everything from, over the 20 years, I've covered everything from real estate to banking, to technology, healthcare in general, now biotech. So you learn the beat. You learn what's going on. I mean, when I came into covering biotech, I went out and tried to find the smartest people that I could find who could explain to me what was going on in the sector, and you learn. And that's what I've done. I mean, I tell people that, I don't have an academic background in science. I don't have a PhD. I'm not an MD. But when it comes to covering biotech, particularly covering biotech investing, which is a little bit different than covering covering the science, the pure science of it. I've got a lot of experience in that area. So the things that I did covering, covering technology stocks and covering the internet stocks, a lot of that stuff just kind of covering, the stock market certainly transfers over to covering biotech.
Now, the biotech sector is rapidly changing. Are there any upcoming game-changing breakthroughs that you think might shift the market in any meaningful way?
Well, the way I think about biotech is I try to break it down. I mean, that's a very broad question, and certainly there are things going on in a lot of the different fields. Whether you want to talk about cancer, hepatitis C, diabetes, there's lots of areas where medicines are coming, being developed that are really going to benefit patients. I think from an investment standpoint, since that's what we're talking about, I tend to sort of look at things, just really from a company by company perspective, because I think that's what investors do. And I think the thing that I've noticed about biotech, certainly over the last few years, is how it's become much more of a catalyst-driven sector. And what I mean by that is people tend to look at the biotech sector in a little bit more of a shorter-term focus. They look at events. They may look at FDA approvals. They look at clinical trials. Those are the kind of things that drive stock value, up or down depending on the way that things go. And I think that's a lot. What investors, whether you're a fundamental investor, or a trader, a day trader, these are the kind of things that people look for.
Now, would you say that's partially because of the fact that biotech is a rather new or quickly changing sector, or do you think that that's just the nature of the sector itself?
I think that's part of it. I think you're right, but I also think that it's a sector that inherently has a lot of risk and a lot of volatility. I mean, you think about it. The statistics tell you that most drugs that companies develop fail. So it's something where you go into it. It's a very high risk business. At the same time, there's a high potential for return, high returns, And that's one of the reasons why people like biotech, because it's the kind of sector where, you could get into a stock and let's say a pivotal clinical trial works and the stock could be up 40-50%, And it's very difficult, you think about banking or finance or real estate or even technology, it's very difficult to find stocks that will do that kind of thing. They'll give you that kind of instant return. Now, on the other side, we talked about risk. I mean, if a drug fails a phase 3 study, for instance, or a drug is rejected by the FDA, the stock could fall 50-60%, you know, so there's always the other side too. But I think that is what really attracts people to it. And because of that, it is a little bit short-term oriented. People do play these events, and then they may get out of the stocks, and then, you know, the stock may go down, and they may get back in it again. So you kind of attract a little bit more of that short-term oriented thinking.
Now, are there any companies in particular you think that will really shine over the next few years?
I tend to look at companies. I think if you look at some of the larger cap companies, I think, you know, a lot of people sort of sometimes overlook them because, you know, they may be a little bit more boring than some of the small cap stuff. But, you know, I think a company like Celgene is a company that I've always admired. You know, it's got a stable of blood cancer drugs. They've just actually done an acquisition where they're getting into solid tumors. I think that's a great growth company. A company that I've liked for a long time, although it's been having a terrible time of late, is Gilead Sciences, and they're the sort of market leader in HIV. They've had a lot of problems stock wise in the last 2 years, dealing with some growth issues. But again, it's a company that I do like from a fundamental basis. In terms of the smaller type companies, I think a company like BioMarin, which a lot of people is kind of in the rare disease space. I think it's a very well-managed company. It's, in the headlines right now, there's a lot of talk about Sanofi Ventus buying Genzyme, and that's kind of been all talk lately. BioMarin is kind of like, the way I look at BioMarin is kind of like a mini Genzyme. They're in the same business as Genzyme. They're smaller. So I think it's a company that I really like. Another company that I think is, in the hepatitis C space that I think is very promising is Pharmasset. Ticker there is VRUS. They've got a stable of really interesting Hep C drugs. They've got a partnership with Roche. It's a company, people sometimes ask me, what company do you think could eventually get taken over? And Pharmasset, while I always sort of hesitate because I hate to sort of make those kind of predictions about, what company will get bought out because it's really difficult to do that. But I think you could very logically see a large company like Roche buy a company like Pharmasset.
Now, to move on from that, what do you make of some of the controversies in biotech? Swings in public opinion on stem cells, cloning, et cetera, can have a profound effect on the financial situations of many biotech companies.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing any interesting trends?
I think the way I look at, again, I tend to look at things, even the sort of public policy type of issues like, you mentioned stem cells, I tend to try to look at things through an investor lens. And when I do that, I think you have to sort of be cautious about a lot of the stem cell stuff and the stem cell stocks in general, mainly because it's a very early field. There's some very interesting research that's being done with stem cells, both embryonic stem cells and let's just call them non-embryonic stem cell research out there. A lot of small companies that are doing things, there's a lot of work that's being done sort of outside of the publicly traded company sphere, in academia. In government research. The way I kind of tend to look at it, again, is that I feel like it's going to be a long time before we see whether any of these drugs or when any of these technologies play out. And so as an investor, you sort of have to think about that. I think I tend to be a very conservative, when I comment on things, I have a very conservative mind and I'm sort of a little bit risk averse. So I like to see more evidence that these things work than what I've seen so far. So I've generally kind of just sort of been, of the mind of when someone asks me, what do you think about a stem cell stock? Let's say Geron, for instance, is one that is pretty popular among sort of retail investors. I can appreciate what they're doing, but I know that company has been around for a long time. They burn a lot of money. They raise a lot of money. They dilute shareholders all the time because they have to pay for the research that they're doing. And that research is slow. So I think you have to sort of take that in mind when you look at those kinds of stocks.
So now I know you're not a scientist, but is there like a certain like time frame that you think those technologies will really start to hit the market?
It's really hard to say. I mean, a lot of this work it takes a long time. I mean, is it 10 years? Is it 15 years? Is it 20 years? Is it 5 years? It's hard to say. There are some of these companies that are sort of starting to move into, moving into clinical trials in humans. But again, it's very early days. And so the hurdle for these kinds of drugs, both the clinical hurdle and the regulatory hurdle is going to be really high. I mean, you have to remember, anytime you get a brand new technology that comes down, works its way through the labs and maybe even eventually gets to the FDA, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny. I mean, drug safety is a huge issue right now from a regulatory standpoint, from the FDA standpoint, and you're going to have to see a lot of data on these drugs before anybody is going to say, okay, these are approved and ready to be used in patients.
Now here's another question. Do you think that maybe the FDA should be a little less regulatory on a lot of these drugs, or?
Personally, I don't. There's always, the way I look at the FDA, the FDA is sort of in a no-win situation. If they go out and are aggressive and approve a drug, and then later on that drug, you find out that drug has some sort of safety issue and it has to be pulled from the market, you get people screaming at the FDA for saying, why did you approve that drug? It's hurting people. You should never have done that. On the other hand, if they're very cautious about a drug and they don't approve it because they want a lot of safety data, let's say they want 2-3 years of safety data before they approve it, then you get people saying, you're keeping life-saving drugs from people. So I think it's a real balancing act for the FDA, and I sympathize with the situation that they're in. Right now the pendulum is sort of swung to the side of, sort of safety first, and sometimes it swings the other way. Right now I would say the FDA is a little bit more conservative than it's been, especially, we've got obesity drugs that are coming through the FDA right now, and that's a big hot topic, and we've seen some issues with diabetes drugs that have been on the market that have been on the market that have come back, and we found out that they may cause people more harm than they actually benefit them. So I think you've got to, I generally like the way the FDA handles things. I don't really have any complaints about the speed at which drugs get approved, because I think, ultimately, if you have a really good drug, the data is going to be there, and the FDA will approve that drug. And if the data is not good, the data are not good, the FDA is going to have issues with it.
Now, are there any places you feel that biotech simply shouldn't go for ethical reasons? Any lines that we might have even crossed thus far?
I'm a stem cell research proponent. I don't have any, sort of issues or qualms about embryonic stem cell research. I'd like to see the government fund that kind of research. I don't think we should be cloning human beings. I mean, there's probably an ethical line that we shouldn't cross. But, other than that, I can't think of anything, just sort of off the top of my head that, where I see biotech doing something today that I think crosses some sort of ethical boundary.
Well, that's all the biotech questions. Where do you get your news or investment information from? Are there any particular sources that you frequent?
I work online, I call news and information from all the sources that probably people do, all the wire services. Twitter is a great tool. I'm a sort of a big Twitter user. I'm kind of a late convert to Twitter. I started actually tweeting just this year, but it really kind of, I think it's an essential tool, I think, for traders, maybe not for more casual investors, but I think as a tool, as a way to get information, if you're sort of dealing with stocks in real time, I think it's a great technology.
And now a little bit less hard hitting questions.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first and worst job?
My first and worst job. Probably, I would say, I worked at a car dealership washing cars in high school, which was not a great job. I guess it was during the summer, so I was outside and it was a hot. I remember being a really hot summer, so it wasn't so bad that I had a hose in my hand all the time. But that was a job, washing cars all summer, was probably not the greatest job I've ever had.
What do you like to do outside your work with thestreet.com?
I coach soccer, I bike, I run, I like to go out to eat, the typical kind of things.
That actually leads into our next question. What is your favorite restaurant that you've ever been to?
Oh, God.
It's very hard.
Let's see. So now I lived in San Francisco. I lived in San Francisco for almost 14 years. So San Francisco is a great restaurant town. I would have to say, there's a restaurant called the Slanted Door, and a Vietnamese restaurant in San Francisco is probably one of the best restaurants I've ever eaten.
Do you have any heroes or people that helped you to get where you are today?
I would probably give a shout out to Jim Cramer, who founded TheStreet.com. I know he's a controversial figure, and people either love him or hate him. I tend to love him. I think he's super smart. I love what he's done. I think TheStreet.com is a great place to work. I think it's a great source of information for investors, and just sort of being around him, reading what he's done, and talking to him, I've learned a lot about the way Wall Street works and about stocks from him. So I think that, I would definitely have to sort of, single him out above anyone else.
Jim Cramer is definitely an interesting figure.
He is.
Okay, this last one is Benzinga's trademark question. What was the best and what was the worst investment decision you've ever made?
Well, that's going to be an easy one for me to answer for you because I don't make investment decisions. One of the things working for TheStreet.com is we have a very strict conflict of interest policy, and I'm not allowed to own any stocks. I'm not allowed to own them, short them. I'm not allowed to invest in any investment partnerships. The only stock I'm allowed to own is actually shares in TheStreet and mutual funds. So it's sort of a sacrifice that you make to do what I do, but at the same time, it sort of clears me of any conflict. I'm not writing about stocks that, that I'm invested in. I'm not even, we take our conflict of interest, that serious, that extra level is that I can't even invest in, banking stocks or technology stocks, even though I don't cover those sectors. We're just not allowed to invest at all.
Now, would you say that sacrifice that you're making is absolutely worth it?
I agree with the policy, and I think you can see where ethical, things come up where, what you write, someone could question you based on what you own. And again, I think journalism, no one goes into journalism for the money. If I would have wanted to make a lot of money, I would have taken my mom's advice and I would have gone to law school after college. I didn't do that. I went into journalism. And it's sort of a calling, and I love it. And I actually spent a couple of years out, I left journalism for a couple of years, but I ended up coming back to it because it's something that I really do love. And there is a certain amount of sacrifice to it. Could I be more financially well off if I, if I took the knowledge that I had with stocks and investing and actually, invested in stocks or managed a portfolio of my own? I probably could, hopefully. But it's not something that I can do.
Love of journalism is stronger for you. It's important.
But your readers are probably out there saying, or your listeners are all thinking, he's crazy, but that's just the way it is.
We all have different paths. Okay, well, thanks, Adam, for your time. That'll do it for this episode of Zing Talk. Remember to check out the latest market-moving information, commentary, and trading ideas on www.benzinga.com. Thank you again for your time, Adam.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Be sure to subscribe in iTunes. You can find a link to do that right off of the Benzinga homepage. The music that you're listening to is Beethoven Virus by Banya and is available on the Internet Archive. All Benzinga podcasts are released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.5 license, and all other rights are reserved.